Is it time for a mind shift? If you don't know what that means, then join your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, a former evangelical Christian pastor and Bible college teacher of over 20 years, along the journey of deconstruction and reconstruction of faith, life, religion, and spirituality.
I'm so happy to be chatting with my friend all the way from Canada, Janice Selby. Thank you for coming back as a guest on Mindshift Podcast, Janice.
My pleasure.
I'm glad we're going to be able to do this bonus episode on dealing with anxiety in the midst of this coronavirus situation. I know you as a therapist, as a counselor, you've got a lot of tips. I saw you did a live Facebook video just a little bit ago, mm-hmm. and that was really good. And I thought, okay, this would be really good to talk about. But you yourself are going through a tremendous amount of anxiety and stuff that you certainly didn't see coming. So I'm thinking that's going to be very helpful for people to hear, because obviously people are dealing with all kinds of untold anxieties right now, mm-hmm. just from, you know, staying from home and worried about being sick, maybe have lost loved ones, or I can't even imagine what you are going through personally at the moment. Are you willing to share a little bit with the listeners about what you've kind of gone through and what you're going through?
I definitely am, because I've had to make portions of it public anyway, because it has affected other people. So for those who don't know, I've been putting together the conference on religious trauma, which was to take place in April in Vancouver, BC. I was very excited about that. Been working on it for a year. But at the beginning of March, I realized I'd have to make a hard decision whether to postpone the conference. The virus was just starting to ramp up at that point. So I made the very hard decision to postpone it. And so my common law partner that I've been living with for the past couple of years was also a business partner in a sense. He helped me. He set up the website and those sorts of things. And he was very encouraging and really supportive. And he's been working in another province. And so I told everyone, I went public and said, I've had to postpone the conference. And then I thought it was odd that he didn't communicate with me for a whole day. And because it was a really emotional time for me to postpone. Hmm. And I thought, what is going on? And the next day he sent me an email terminating our relationship. And it was such a shock. It was such a shock. My daughter and I were preparing to move out to Ontario where he was, because he said he had secured a place for us. That was the direction we were moving in. And, you know, he'd been sending me photographs of the place that we were moving into and the renovations. So I was ready to quit my job in British Columbia and move out there. So suddenly he terminates the relationship, says he needs to focus on his daughters. So two of the daughters are grown and one is a teenager. So I just went into quite a bit of shock at that point, because that was my future. And then the next day I started trying to refund people their money for the tickets for the conference. And I was only able to do a certain amount of those. And then people started getting the message there was insufficient funds in the account, which meant that he had been siphoning money and draining money out of that account. So then I was faced with the realization that he wasn't who I thought he was. We'd been living together for 2 years. We've been together as a couple, 2.5 years. Then the next week, I received a text from my landlord saying that we were being evicted because our rent was continually paid late. And this was a huge shock to me, because I always paid my partner. I sent him my portion and then he added his portion and did it by e-transfer to the landlord. I had never heard anything from the landlord that there was any problem, and I assumed it was being paid on time. And of course, now the pandemic is in a much greater swing at this point, and my daughter, who lives with me, has severe immune compromised issues because she's a type 1 diabetic with lots of complications. And so the landlord is saying at that point, you're being evicted, and I'm going to be bringing people through to look at the suite. And I said, you mustn't do that. We can't expose my daughter. And I didn't know the rent was being paid late. Landlord has no sympathy, doesn't care, just wants us out. So then I have to launch a dispute online with the residential tenancy branch. And then the next week, which was last week, really to top it off, I had a phone call from my partner's wife, not ex-wife, wife. She told me they were not divorced. They were not even separated. He'd been living a double life with me these past 2 years. Anytime I thought he was simply back visiting his children, he actually was taking his wife and his youngest daughter. They were going on vacations. It was just a tremendous shock. And so in a span of 3 weeks, the life that I thought I had, that I was building with this person, absolutely burned to the ground. So I managed to get a bit of a reprieve on the eviction because Canada, British Columbia passed a moratorium on evictions, but that's only temporary. So I need to be trying to secure another place for us in a very tight market. And now, you know, with the black mark of having an eviction beside my name, I've never had trouble before. I've never had trouble with the landlord. Mm-hmm. I've never been evicted. But it makes it very hard to find another place to live when all the rental applications want to talk to your current landlord, with whom you're having a tremendous dispute.
He's not being sympathetic at all.
No, obviously not at all.
Didn't take into consideration the fact that, yeah, your partner was apparently siphoning off a chunk of your rent money every month, you thinking that everything was fine, and it wasn't. Yeah. So, yeah, quite a bit of shocks.
Yeah, one after the other, and in such a short span of time. So really multiple losses. And then, of course, all on the background of this life-threatening pandemic that's sweeping across the world. So we've been, our community in British Columbia has actually been, we're doing pretty well over here. My brother works at the hospital, and he's a nurse, and he said we haven't been slammed yet, but everybody's just kind of holding their breath, waiting. And so the social distancing is certainly happening in Canada, or let's call it physical distancing, not necessarily social, right? But where we're maintaining that 2 meter or 6 foot distance from anybody. Mm-hmm. And many people are working from home. My job, besides being a therapist, I work in a specialist office doing medical transcription, and that's considered an essential service. So I still have to go to work every day. And you know what? There's anxiety that comes with that because absolutely, I'm working with coworkers. And so when I get home from work every day, the first thing I do is take off my clothes, put them in the hamper, and jump in the shower because I can't risk exposing my daughter.
Absolutely. You can't be too careful.
Virus. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you've just received just a series of unbelievable body blows, just one after the other, after the other, after the other. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about this the other day in preparation for talking to you, that it was just last July, my sister Valerie and I were up in Vancouver, BC. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You and your partner came down from Kelowna. We had lunch with everybody. We had a fantastic day out. We went with you guys, went to Gastown in Vancouver. You took us by the hotel where the conference was supposed to be held. You were so excited to show us everything. And I've been following, obviously, promoting it, talking about it on the podcast, having people that were just fantastic, you know, some former guests that were on the show.
Right.
You know, we just had Marlene Winnell just a couple of weeks ago. We had Yanya Lalich. Mm-hmm. And here, that obviously was a huge devastating loss to have to cancel that. But to hear about all the other stuff that's gone on, and it's still on, I mean, there's a lot of uncertainties, even you don't know what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks, months. Mm-hmm. So coping with anxiety, you are the prime test case. If anyone can handle anxiety, it's got to be you. I don't understand how you can still function, to be quite honest.
You know, I had, I kept working throughout this, but I did have to take, I think one day I didn't go into work, and a couple of days I had to leave early. So I could sit at my desk and still listen to the reports and type out the reports, but just every 15 minutes or so, a wave of grief and terror would wash over me as I was trying to figure out, what do I do? It will bankrupt me personally to have to go into my own very limited finances and pay back all the money that the person I thought was my partner, all the money that he took. And then, of course, with the threat of eviction looming, just very, very heavy. And so as time has gone by, I've been able to catch my breath a little bit more. It's been about a week since his wife called and, you know, told me that he'd been living a double life. So I've had a week to kind of digest that. But really, the dissonance between my heart and my brain trying to figure everything out, because I thought this person was a certain way, a person of great integrity and kindness and compassion and loyalty. And my family, I certainly thought that too. And you know what? Being a therapist and having this happen, I have had people say to me, well, how could you not see? How could you not see it? But if someone is lying and they are absolutely bent on keeping you from seeing the truth, and you've had no indication, he might fall into psychopathy. Like, it wouldn't be totally ridiculous to say he might fall into that category. Well,
there's been examples. Yeah, there's been examples, many examples of that kind of thing going on. People having completely two different families for years, not knowing about the other one whatsoever.
Yeah.
Only by some sheer fluke that they find out that this person's been leading a completely double life. Yes. If you're traveling and you're on the road, that kind of thing, you have a built-in excuse for being away from home for large periods of time anyway.
Yes.
So it's not like a normal, quote, situation. You know, you're not going to suspect someone right off the bat. I don't suspect my partner. She's having, she's got a double life, you know, but
now
I got to go ask her for sure. You know, do you have another family somewhere that I don't know about?
Show me your phone. Yeah.
I know it. It's true. You're not going to snoop in someone's phone. You don't normally think about stuff like that.
That's right. And so I missed some work and, I had to get in some extra sleep, because when we're under times of greater stress and anxiety, we will feel a lot of fatigue, and fatigue actually starts in our brain. It's our body's response when it feels like if we continue exerting ourselves, it's going to be dangerous. So everything was on high alert for me. I was just this gaping wound, really. That's what I felt like. And so the body was saying, we need to conserve energy. We need to go to sleep. We need to go to sleep. So I was sleeping a lot, had to really guard against self-medicating, you know, because everything hurt so much. And my immediate response was, I have got to numb this pain. And then it was hard to wake up every day, because every day I felt like something worse was coming.
You know, the next shoe was going to drop.
Yeah.
You start to get to feeling like you're cursed or something, like, my God, what is going on? Mm-hmm. That's perhaps where the religious piece might come in. I know we haven't touched on that yet, but I'm sure we'll get there.
Right.
You know, as both former evangelicals, former Christians, we would have reached for that spiritual remedy, prayer, the Bible.
Mm-hmm. That would have been the self-medication.
That's one way to self-medicate. You can drink, you can take drugs, or you can pray and you can read your Bible and engage in all sorts of thought terminating cliches to dull the pain. And like you say, the cognitive dissonance, because I can identify on some level that panic, that feeling, you know, just a few weeks ago, because I've been working from home. The UK here, we've been on complete lockdown for about 2 weeks now.
Wow.
The whole country's shut down, which surely is going to happen eventually to Canada. Mm-hmm. You might be a few weeks or a month behind.
How are you getting your groceries?
Well, the stores are still open. Okay. You have to go, you have to line up, you have to queue up at the grocery store. If you go to like a bigger store, smaller stores, like your small shops and things, they have signs that say limited to, you know, five people in the store. You have to wait outside. Mm-hmm. But like my wife went to a big store the other week and she had to wait in a queue outside the store 2 meters apart. And you go in, you get your stuff and you go out, and then they let another person in.
Right.
And so essential services are still open, but stores are closed, restaurants, bars, pubs, everything is completely shut down.
Same here. And so restaurants are only available for takeout. Mm-hmm. And of course, any grocery deliveries have been totally just swamped.
That's what they're doing here. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And we're in the same situation. And really, we know that as humans, we crave certainty, security, and order. Mm-hmm. Those are the big three. That's what we want. That's what is going to make us feel safe. And of course, religion plays right into that, because religion promises if you say these magic words, if you hold these beliefs, you will have certainty. You'll be certain of an afterlife. You'll have security. God's going to protect you. Everything is working out for your good. And you'll have order in your life because you believe that God is doing everything for your good. Mm-hmm. So when you have, in my case, I say a divorced religion, some people say they've lost their faith or their faith abandoned them. When you no longer have that to cling to, it's a whole different ball game. You really can feel very much like you're out in the wilderness. And then to have, when terrible, difficult things do happen, it can almost be a sense of abandonment again and again. Like, I thought everything was going a certain way, and then I find out it's absolutely not. And it can be terrifying, because we feel like if we don't think there's anybody in our corner, you know, that cosmic big brother watching out for us, it's very challenging. And raised in religion, we're raised to feel kind of helpless anyway, that we're in need of a rescuer. And we're always waiting. I was always waiting for Jesus to rescue me. Absolutely. And as a woman, I was waiting for a man to rescue me. You know, I had to first my dad, and then I had to have a husband. Well, and then now here I am 20 years later. I don't have Jesus. I don't have a husband. my partner has just walked out on me.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah. And so that sense of hopelessness can rise up pretty quickly. And that's when it becomes so important to be scrupulous with our mental health and our emotional health and our thoughts, and be aware as soon as panic starts setting in, like I can feel it and my jaw clenches and my heart is pounding, I need to stop and think about, okay, what thought was I just dwelling on? What thought was I just having that triggered that anxiety to come up? And then I need to take the time to examine that thought. Is it true? Is there evidence for it? How likely is it? Because we get tripped up between possibility and probability. Just because it's possible something could happen, that does not mean it is probable that it will happen. So it's important for us to kind of stop that before it gets into rumination, like the needle going around the groove in that old LP record, you know.
Stuck
and it
in
just
a groove.
That's right.
Stuck in a rut.
Yeah, it's totally it. And it our is. Our thoughts are like that. And that's what we call rumination and perseveration, when we get stuck on that negative anxiety inducing thought. So we want to really examine that thought, examine the likelihood of it, not get trapped between possibility and probability, and then start working to replace that thought with a thought that's going to be more helpful. So worry and anxiety, those are natural things that come up. That's part of being human. It's actually part of our built-in smoke detector that we have, right? So sometimes the smoke detector goes off and it's, holy shit, there's a fire. We better get out of here. But sometimes the smoke detector goes off and there's not anything that we can actually see that's causing it. Maybe the battery is, you know, shorting out in the smoke detector. So in our body, that's called the HPA axis. And it controls a lot of our bodily functions. And so when that's happening, we have that anxiety, we need to pay attention to it and see, what is there really something wrong here? Pay some closer attention to it. When it's kind of left open like a faucet that's on and there's just this constant stream of anxiety, worry, panic, that can have hard effects on our body and on our mental health. And right now we're collectively, you know, as a species, experiencing this, because our generation, even our parents' generation, for the most part, they haven't lived through something like this. It's similar to going to war or having war, you know, World War II, World War I, but it's different even from that, because we can't see this enemy. It makes us want to contract. Fear makes us want to contract, but I feel like what we need to be doing is expanding. You can even just feel the difference there when you take in a deep breath and your lungs expand. now's the time to be trying to expand yourself if you can. I mean, well, you're stuck at home. You're actually safe at home. You're not really stuck there. You're safe there. So how are you going to look at it? How are you going to frame it? Now is the time you can catch up on learning things that you have been putting off or didn't think you had time for. It's the time to rekindle old friendships by picking up the telephone or doing a Zoom chat or FaceTime. There are some good things that can come out of it. Even not using the terms like economic collapse, because that's a big one in Canada right now. How about instead thinking of it as a type of ecological renewal? Things are, you know, there's less pollution going on now than there has been in a very long time. The earth is having a chance to breathe while we're all staying home and not driving around in our cars and trucks. So it's not all bad. It feels horrible, but it's not all bad.
That's a really good example, isn't it, of focusing on the positive as much as you can. You don't want to, I'm not saying, put on your rose-colored glasses and everything's wonderful. It's not, you're not a pie in the sky thing, but I can testify to what you were talking about, that perseveration, being stuck and obsessing, because a few weeks back when I was still working at the college where I teach, that was a big thing because we had hundreds and hundreds of students all congregating in the cafeteria, so I would have to walk through there and on breaks and things, and I was just almost in a panic mode. And I found myself, I was obsessing reading the news every day, every second, every break that I had. I was online. I was checking the latest situations. And, you know, and I had a workshop full of students that we had to get them through. And there was really no way to practice safe social distancing because there were 13 of us in a room. Yeah. We did everything we could do. But there were times when I almost had a blind sense of panic, like, oh, my God, I've just got to get out of here. But I couldn't. And my wife told me, she said, you're obsessing about this stuff. There's certain things you can control. You know, obviously wash your hands, be smart, and all the rest of it, which I was doing and trying to help protect my students as much as I can. We did take some pretty drastic measures. We actually told them, you're not going into the cafeteria on the breaks. You're going to go sit outside, bring your own lunches.
Excellent. Not,
you know, that last week, we practiced some severe social distancing.
Right.
And we got them all through. And then the college closed down as the whole country closed down. So I had to step back. And like you say, I had to go, okay, I've got to put some things in perspective here. I cannot obsess about this stuff and wake up in the morning. The first thing I'm on the news, you know, and then it's just feeding in and feeding in. Oh my God. Oh my God. You know?
Yeah. It's like a never ending loop of doom and gloom. And Lisa was so right. She's such a wise woman. We must focus on what we can control. Not what we can't control. That is a surefire recipe for anxiety, worrying about things that we cannot control. So one thing we can control, as you've been saying, is how often we are tuning in to the news station. What stations and what websites are we going to? Are we spending time, a few minutes here and there throughout the day at a reputable site that is not going to be paid for keeping us there? Like, so I do the CDC, the WHO, World Health Organization. And in Canada, we have the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, the CBC. And I feel those all are somewhat trustworthy. They don't have a vested interest in keeping me coming back, you know, with all that bad news and they're getting paid for all the clicks. Yeah. They have a vested interest in me becoming informed and me being safe and my family being safe. So in the morning before I go to work, I make sure I have a listen or I stop by those websites to see if there's been anything new that's come up overnight that I need to be aware of. And then I go to work and I'm not poking around on the internet at all these different sites while I'm at work. I'm doing my job. And I'm choosing to listen to podcasts, especially right now because I have all this added stress and burdens going on in my life. So I've had to take a break from some of my true crime favorites and psychology favorites that I love. And I've really lately latched on to a great podcast, another one by Parcast, and it's called Survival. And it's people from all through history, incredible events that have happened, and what people have done to survive and how they have survived. And I find it so inspiring. And I do the same thing on Netflix now. I'm not watching my my usual things. I'm seeking out comedies, things that will make me laugh, because laughter boosts our immunity. And we need to be laughing right now. Look for things to laugh about. I'm looking for funny shows. I'm watching incredible documentaries and inspiring biographies, other people who have gone through very difficult circumstances and they have survived. They've come out of it on the other side. They have made it. And those are incredibly important to me at this time in my life, to be focusing on those things.
We are just going to take a very short break in this conversation between myself and my friend Janice Selby. Still unbelievable, all the stuff that she's gone through. What a survivor. And the fact that she's able to reach out and help other people right now who might be struggling. I hope you are keeping yourself safe, staying at home as much as you possibly can, maintaining social distancing, washing your hands. Don't take any unnecessary risks whatsoever. You don't want to catch this disease, and you certainly don't want to be the person who might be responsible for spreading it along, especially if it's to someone who is vulnerable, the older population, people with underlying healthcare problems already. So stay safe, be smart, and I hope that some of the advice that you're hearing from myself and Janice proves to be helpful for you during this difficult time, especially if you're like both of us, formerly religious people who now don't have that crutch, as it were, to lean on in these sort of difficult times. So what do you do? How do you cope with the stresses and the anxiety? As we have been saying, it's really, really important to guard your own mental health and your own sanity. And I think that some of the very practical ways that Janice is giving advice are going to be helpful as well going forward in the second half of this chat. All right, so what is happening over the next few weeks here on Mindshift Podcast? Coming up this Friday, just to bring you up to speed as to what's going on, I had a conversation just the other day with Stephanie McCown, author of Raised Evangelical, How I Lost My Faith and Found Myself. We chatted the other day, so that episode is going to drop this coming Friday. And then hopefully, if everything goes well, I've got a call booked in with Catherine Stewart. She is the author of the book, The Power Worshippers, Inside the Dangerous Rise of Christian Nationalism. This is something that Andrew Seidel and I talked about a few months ago, so we're going to return to this topic of Christian nationalism, dominion theology, and Christian Reconstructionism, the politicization of evangelicalism. So look for that episode coming out soon. I'll just say one last thing before we get back into the chat with myself and Janice, that if you want to follow me, you can find me on Twitter at MindShift2018. You can also look up the MindShift Podcast Facebook page, or if you want to support this show on Patreon, you can find the link to my Patreon page in the show notes. Okay, now that we've gotten some of the business out of the way, let's return to the chat with myself and Janice as we continue to explore these coping strategies, how to deal with anxiety during the coronavirus outbreak. You've got to find a balance, haven't you? I think that's one thing that I'm hearing a lot is, yes, you don't want to put on the rose-colored glasses and pretend that everything's fine, because it's not. Right. There's a lot of bad shit that's going down, and it's going to get worse. I mean, if you guys haven't reached the stage of where we are or where Italy or even the United States right now, it's going to happen eventually. They kept saying here in the UK, they kept saying, we're 2 weeks behind Italy. We're 2 weeks behind Italy.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, you know, and I could feel that anxiety rising. You know, as I say, when I was walking through the cafeteria and there's 300-400 students, and of course these are all young people, they don't care, they're all sitting around not practicing any sort of social distancing, on their phones, sitting right across from each other, sitting around a table laughing, joking. And I'm thinking, God, you people don't get it. I wanted to shout and say something, but I'm like, okay, well, that's obviously
from a distance,
not,
stand across the room and
from
shout
from a safe distance.
Phone them.
And it felt just incredibly irresponsible, but there was nothing I could really do other than, as you say, control my little. So I had my 13 learners.
Yes.
Fortunately, they were all adults.
Excellent.
So, and we had been talking about different scenarios and things. And so, we did what we had to do, because obviously most of them had families and all that too. So They were extremely concerned because the course I teach is all military veterans. So some of the guys had come from all over the country live on campus, and it's a 5-week course that I teach. And so some of them were as far away as, you know, Scotland and other parts of the country. And they're mm-hmm. very concerned about getting home to their families, you know, so they were in this very weird place.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to keep it, you know, as balanced as we could while focusing on our work, which also helped as well.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Having something to focus on that is not related to the virus can be very helpful. So I'm encouraging people right now to make lists. I'm a big list maker, and particularly under stress and anxiety, our memory can be affected, our cognitive functioning. It's hard to learn new things, and it's hard to even retain information that maybe we didn't have a hard time accessing before. So make your lists. And well, some of those lists might be related to preparedness, things that you need to be prepared as we're going through this pandemic. Make sure you're spending time making other lists too. Like, I encourage people to make happiness lists, and you can do them from A to Z. You know, you can have one that's friends, people that you love, people that you can call on when you're really feeling stressed or you want to just talk about happy memories. Make one that's your favorite bands, your favorite songs. Make one that's books that have been inspiring, or, you know, just all these different things, and a list of happy memories. And then keep those lists somewhere prominent. You put them on your fridge, you put them on your table, because again, when we're feeling overwhelmed, it's hard to call up those things from our memory. But if you're making the lists, and even you can make a list of ways that you can help other people in this
there's
time.
A lot of things you can do, even online and all that. There's all kinds of online support groups. I joined a group on Facebook called the Kindness Pandemic. It's getting huge, bigger and bigger all the time. And it's nothing more than people posting up inspirational stories about what they're doing right now, how they're helping people, how their community is helping each other in really creative ways. And it's really uplifting. Like you say, those are inspirational stories. Even if you don't contribute to that group, you can still get on there and just read about what people are doing safely and responsibly in ways that helps their own mental health as well as those around them. You know, seeing
the very best use of social media to do something like that.
Absolutely.
It's really making good use of it. Yeah.
Especially in a time when we're seeing this virus is revealing the dark side so much of humanity. I was reading an article this morning about profiteering, people that are attempting to profiteer, selling things like hand sanitizer, toilet paper, masks online at, you know, up to 2,000% increase just because they can gouge the public because they're panicking right now and they're taking steps on eBay and Amazon to shut people down. And yet for every one they shut down, there's 100 that pop up somewhere else. So it's unbelievable it shows what people are capable of. There's this kind of thin veneer of civilization, isn't there? And then people are queuing up to buy guns in America, and, you know, this gun sales have spiked through the roof.
Right. Yeah.
You know? So, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's important because we are, the media tends to bombard us with exactly those stories. So then it's extra important to do things like you're talking about, where you're looking on Facebook for kindness groups, for inspirational stories. And I tell people that fear is contagious, but so is courage.
Mm-hmm.
So is courage. So is kindness. So we need to be focusing on those things and doing what we can to spread some kindness and some love in this difficult time.
Well, and going back to your point about religion, I remember I was listening to your Facebook Live event. It was a couple of weeks ago, I think, or a week and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And you made the point that really resonated with me. You said that when events happen, we want to attach some interpretation to them. We need to understand why is this happening. And this is something that popped out at me, because when I was an evangelical, this whole thing about what we call a biblical or Christian worldview was all about reading things through the lens of Scripture, as it were. So every time you read about something in the Bible, it's basically saying it's interpreting these events from the point of view that God was behind it. God was in control. God was in charge of all this stuff. And it's very revealing to see the various Christian responses all over the world. But one of the things that struck me as I read these various articles and blog posts by pastors and leaders trying to explain it. They're keen to say, well, God is in control. That's their sort of baseline starting point. And from that, they have to come up with all kinds of explanations. Why is this happening? Why isn't God stopping it? And they must come up with something. And of course, the explanations have run the gamut from, this is God's judgment of homosexuality and abortion. Yeah. And
it's the gays. It's always the gays. That's the first thing that they
the first
say.
Protocol.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Or what Kenneth Copeland said the other day, it's actually a demonic thing. And he stood up and rebuked the demons of whatever. And in Jesus' name commanded the virus to stop. And, you know, from the, all the way in between to these pastors that are refusing to close their church services. And there's a guy down in Louisiana that's been arrested and he's out again. And he turned right around and had another service.
Yeah.
And it was like a thousand people.
And
so it's really revealing, isn't it?
It is, and it relates very much to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, that humans crave certainty, security, and order. And so that order aspect of it, where we're looking for signs all the time. What is it? You know, what does the Bible have to say about this? So anytime in the world, anytime we have plagues or pestilence, or even anytime Iraq is in the news, it's like a prophetic dog whistle for evangelicals. They're like, what's going on? And they're running and they're shouting.
Armageddon.
World. That's right. Armageddon. It's so weird for us, having been on the inside of that, where it made perfect sense. And yes, that absolutely must be what it is. And now we're on the outside of it going, those people are not good futs. Like, that just doesn't make sense. You're rebuking a demon. Like, do you know there are no demons? It's a tricky one. And I really feel for people who have left their deeply religious families and their families, particularly elders. But if their families are so entrenched and trapped in this sort of biblical mindset, it's a very hard time. It's a hard time for the people who are still stuck in it and they're terrified that their loved ones are going to hell. And it's a hard time for those of us who have managed to make it out. And we see that our loved ones are stuck in this false mindset.
It's true.
It's tricky.
I remember talking to John Atack, who's an ex-Scientologist, and one of the things he told me, and this has really stuck with me, he said, one of the best things you can do as far as your own reconstruction is to try and explain to people who have never had any religious background at all, try to explain to them as clearly and objectively as you can what you used to believe. And he said, what you need to do while you're explaining it to them is just watch the reaction on their face. Just watch their faces.
Yeah.
And I've done this since I talked to John last year, and it's true. I've explained my former belief system and really carefully gauged the reaction on the other person's face. And the shock and the disbelief.
They're trying to be polite. Yeah, exactly. And they're still
you
so
used
shocked.
To believe what? You used to believe that? I mean, and that's one of the best ways to gauge how far you've come, as you say, when you've walked away. You go, I guess I've really come a long ways, because I would have had the default of the prayer, the Bible study, and the support of the community, the church, and all the rest of it. And now that's not there. And I'm looking at these responses of a lot of Christians worldwide, and it's just unbelievable. But we would have been in the middle of it, like you say.
Yeah, so I definitely have compassion for those who are still entrenched, because they do stand to lose a lot. Walking away, waking up, and no longer holding those beliefs comes with a cost. So, I mean, it comes with a prize also, which is your liberty, your freedom. I'm now free to think what I want, explore what I want, do what I want. And I don't have the fear that I'm being judged by a God in the sky. And you know what? I've already lost a lot of things. Sometimes I'm like, well, you know, truly what I have left is my health and the health of my family. And that's it. So when everything has been stripped away, and this pandemic will strip away a lot for a lot of people, I hope that people will use it as an opportunity to examine and explore their lives and see what is worth keeping, what needs to be jettisoned. You know,
absolutely.
what's really just dragging you down and sapping your energy and not giving anything back to you. Free yourself as best you can. from those items and from those beliefs.
Absolutely. It's revealed a lot of things, as you say. It has shown some pretty stark lights on some stuff that was already wrong with our global society. And now it's really revealed, like we were talking about profiteering and people queuing up for guns and ammunition. And, you know, there's the good side of things. But look at, for example, America. I mean, it's really shown the cracks in the healthcare system and the total lack of preparedness. What happens when a society is utterly unprepared to cope with it when they should have done a lot of things months and months ago, and now we're reaping the sad harvest of that.
Yes.
And it's going to get worse, and it could have been mitigated as compared to other countries like South Korea, for example. They were on it right away, testing hundreds of thousands of people. And so they put some severe, drastic measures in place. But
And I feel for my American friends, because your leader is not governing wisely and he's not governing with transparency. And in a time of crisis, we absolutely need that. We must be able to believe that our leaders are wise, that they're being informed, and that they're acting wisely on that information, and that they're sharing truthfully with us. The leader of the United States right now doesn't seem to be doing any of those things, and it makes it really hard to trust anybody or anything. So it's a hard time, and you're going to have to depend on yourself to a degree. And this is something we talked about at the beginning of the program as well. So if we were raised in evangelicalism, we were raised to be dependent, to stay dependent. And it's hard when you're thrust out into the world, then the rug's been pulled out from you and you don't have that crutch anymore. But you actually see that you are capable of a great many things. Mm-hmm. You can get through this. Do not succumb to the rumination, to the thinking that everything's wrong and why should I even continue? We don't want to get stuck in those places. Things that people can do. So we talked a little bit about lists, making lists. We talked about being choosy where you get your information from. If it's possible for you to get outside, do get outside. The fresh air is good for us. Exercise is good for us physically, mentally, and emotionally. When we're under stress, we need to be maintaining adequate rest and hydration and healthy food to the best of our ability. We talked about humor, looking for things that are humorous and things that are inspirational. A lot of people right now are finding that they have become homeschooled families and homeschool parents. And it's, you know, with some degree of reluctance. And when I think back to my own time homeschooling my kids when I was very religious, I loved it. I absolutely loved that time with them because I like to try and have fun. And I'm a somewhat creative person. And so I just would encourage your listeners who are thrust into the role of homeschool parent now, have as much fun as you can. Use games, use board games, computer games. Those are great ways to teach children. You can take them on virtual museum tours also over the internet. You can turn just about anything into a learning opportunity, and you don't need to be comparing yourself and whatever curriculum. Don't compare that to other people. Your family is unique and you are unique, and no one knows your children quite like you do.
That's
so
true.
use that opportunity. If they love dinosaurs or they love Barbie or whatever it is, you're going to be working with those tools, trying to figure out, you know, ways that you could be teaching them using those things. So it's an opportunity to get to know your children even better.
And as you say, there's a tremendous amount of resources available online right now. We're seeing more and more and more of that. In fact, as a teacher, I'm seeing a lot of companies are offering their products for free right now that you normally would have to pay for.
That's right.
Or teachers, resources online to create curriculum, to create quizzes that are really fun and engaging. And they're saying, okay, for right now, for the next, you know, 3 or 6 months, our product is free. So if you're, like you say, if you're a homeschooler all of a sudden and you didn't want to be, you can take a look at some of the available resources that are for free right now or severely reduced prices.
Yeah, tragedy can bring out the worst in humanity, no question, but it also can bring out the very best. So that's what we want to be focusing on.
I was going to say too, talking about how it's very revealing. It forces us to focus on, like you said, what things right now are really, really important and which things are not so important. Do we need all these things that we normally surround ourselves with? It forces us to slow down and reevaluate. I need a place to live. I need some good food on the table. I need to make sure my relationships are healthy to the best of my ability. And aside from that, this, you know, not much more. Obviously, we need some money. I'm sure people, and there, I know there are people who are absolutely panicking because they may have lost their job and they don't have any way to get funding other than a little bit of money from the government. You know, so that's a definite concern. I'm hoping that the governments, they're going to have to step up. Some of them are doing more, I guess, than others.
Yeah, but the Canadian government is really, I feel, doing a great job. They got behind it a little slower than I would have liked, but I absolutely can say that I feel our government and our prime minister does have Canadians' best interests at heart. And that gives me a degree of calmness, you know, and feeling like, okay, we can do it. And when I go out for my walk every day, when I walk past people now, you know, and they tend to step off the sidewalk or whatever, giving each other that nice wide berth, but everybody is making eye contact. People are going out of their way to say hello. And it's, it makes me tearful. It's just, we want to connect. We love to connect with other people. And so even though we can't physically be hugging each other, we can still connect and let people know that we care.
And it shows the importance of that connection. The fact that we're all so busy rushing around all the time. We jump in our car, we whiz off to work, we come home, we go inside, we flip on the TV, we eat our food, we go to bed, watch some Netflix, and get up and do the same routine the next day. We don't necessarily know our neighbors and all that. And like you said, this is a good time. You can do a lot of things. One of the things I saw in that kindness pandemic was a father who filmed his 6 or 7 year old son. And he came home from work and he saw his son up on the shed in the back garden. And he was like, whoa, what's the kid doing up on the roof of the shed? So he's panicking, obviously. But it turns out that he was building a relationship with these two girls in the house behind them across the fence. And that was the only way he could see them and still maintain, you know, that safe distance.
That's very
sweet. And he'd never known these girls before. And he was saying, this is amazing that this has forced them to become friends, and doing it from a distance and on top of the roof of the shed. And he said, I look forward to the day when all this is over and they then will be able to play like kids normally would. And it's brought them together.
That's beautiful.
You know? So it's an inspirational story.
We're being shaken up. Things are topsy-turvy. So our certainty and security and order has been tossed on its head. And we will have to rethink things. And as a society, and lots of things are going to be different at the end of this when we're able to come out of this. And so it's kind of like my life. It's not right now, things aren't ending the way I wanted them. They're not, you know, what I thought was going to happen is not what's happening, but I'm still here. And as long as I don't give up, then there's still a very reasonable chance that things will turn out just fine. They'll turn out differently than I expected. It's not the ending that I had written, you know, but that doesn't mean it can't still be beautiful, that it won't still be a beautiful life that's fulfilling and meaningful to me. It's just not the one that I thought would happen.
Well, and the fact is that, okay, as painful as what happened with your partner, that was obviously a devastating thing. But as you say, looking at it from and I'm not trying to belittle it at all, but looking at it from the most positive angle, you could say, well, at least I know the truth now. Mm-hmm. There's something in there, isn't there? Now it's all the cards are on the table. Mm-hmm. At least you're not living in this life where you didn't know the secret life was going on.
Yes.
Painful as it was to rip that Band-Aid or plaster off. Now you're at least you can make decisions from an informed point of view, as bad as some of them have to be.
Oh, yes. And you know, I have been so beautifully surprised by the number of people, and I mean people who are strangers to me, people who maybe follow me on Twitter, but we've never interacted in a personal way. And as I've had to go public about what's happened because it's involved other people's finances, I have received the most tender messages of loving care from strangers, people just checking in saying, I am concerned for you. You have a lot going on, and I haven't lost faith in you. I still trust in you, because my hope is that I still want to put the conference on. It's not canceled, it's postponed, but there's such a need for people to talk about religious trauma and religious trauma syndrome. It's significant. So yeah, I want to be able to move ahead with that. And we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know. We make our plans, and then then we just see what happens.
That's it. Well, and as you say, it's such an important thing to do. At some point, it's going to go ahead. It's got to be done. So, as I say, talking to Marlene Winnell just for the last podcast, and what struck me about what she was saying as she went through the absolute pervasiveness of religion, you know, and I said, well, why can't you just walk away from it all and just say, well, I don't believe it anymore, like I don't believe in Santa Claus or Father Christmas. And she started going through the ways that it sinks its tentacles into every single aspect of our life.
Yes.
Is unbelievable. And when you start to disentangle from that, it's so incredibly difficult. And that is in itself trauma inducing and trauma producing. Mm-hmm. And so there's so much work. And yeah, this virus situation right now, someone said on our Facebook group that I wonder how many Christians are going to start deconstructing and ultimately maybe walk away from it all because of the fact that this has revealed so many cracks in the system that they may have been papering over for a long time.
Yeah, it'll go one way or the other. Either people will see that it's a sham, and they'll leave, or they'll dig in even deeper, because that's what happens when we're faced with a crisis. Are we going to keep doing the extra work to maintain our beliefs? Or are we going to be willing to actually step outside and take a look as an outsider and say, this is not right. This isn't working. Well, and it takes courage.
Yeah. I mean, I was just going to say, looking at this example of this pastor, Tony Spell, down in Louisiana, outside of Baton Rouge, you know, his narrative is, this is a demonic attack. It's a designed attack to get churches to close their doors. It's a satanic, demonically. So we as Christians need to stand up against this thing. And so there's that narrative of having an enemy, you know, and so that's how obviously cults work in many ways. They create this us versus them narrative. Mm-hmm. And so he's been able to convince his followers, look, you know, this isn't just about battling against a virus. This is a spiritual warfare. This is something that we as Christians need to fight against to keep the church doors open. And they're trying to shut us down, and you've got to, you know, maintain this thing, even though he's putting people at risk.
Yeah.
So you're seeing that.
And there is a danger anytime we are really fostering and feeding the us versus them mentality, and particularly in a nation that is so gun loving,
gun obsessed, really.
Yeah, it can be worrisome. So I definitely hope that people are doing these wise things that we've talked about. Whatever you feed is what's going to grow. So if you're going to feed your fear and feed your anxiety, guess what? Bottomless pit. You can feed it until it takes over your entire life.
Absolutely.
Or you can choose to feed other parts of yourself and nourish other parts of yourself that make you stronger, that make you more compassionate, things that will make you resilient. Because right now we need flexibility, because we're entering a time of chaos. We need flexibility and we need resilience. Those are the things we need to work on. Those are the things we need to be training our children and teaching our children to develop.
It's difficult because, as you said, panic spreads just like a contagion, hysteria spreads. And it's hard to battle against that because you feel that it does encroach on your life in real ways. Yeah. For example, going into the stores just a few weeks ago and seeing shelves that were empty.
Yes.
That's something that none of us have ever seen in our lifetimes.
It's
ever.
A shocking sight. Yeah.
It is. And as you walk down the aisles of these stores, okay, there was still food on the shelves in certain places, but seeing entire aisles completely empty with signs up saying, we don't have anything right now. You're going to, when and if we do get this product back on the shelves, you'll be limited to X number per customer.
Right.
And you think, oh my God, I've got to have this. We saw that with the toilet paper situation.
Yep.
You know, panicking. So, because yeah. I need toilet paper at the end of the day. I don't have a bidet in my house, you know? So that would have been a smart thing. Every time you go to Europe, you think, you know what?
They're laughing. Yeah.
Europe's laughing at us right now. Here in the UK, people don't believe in bidets, so it's not a thing here.
But, you know, the truth of the matter is, so I was born in 1970, and I think Pampers was just maybe coming on the scene a few years after that. So our mothers, we had cloth diapers, and those were cleaned by hand. You are Absolutely. Not going to die because you don't have disposable tissue and toilet paper. You are going to figure out pretty quickly other means of keeping yourself clean.
Absolutely.
And so we don't have to buy into that panic. And I think one good thing that will come out of this pandemic, like you were talking about with the food, with some of the shelves being bare, we are going to become a lot more self-reliant. We've become quite lazy as a whole. We do love our convenience. I love my convenience.
Sure.
But we are going to be called back to a time where we are having to produce more of the things that we consume. And we'll have to think more about our consumer habits and what we do spend money on and what we do spend time on. So it's very good for us to look at these things and re-examine them and reorganize our life. This is going to be a chapter in history. I don't believe it's going to be the last chapter by any stretch. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one day we'll be talking with our grandchildren about what happened in 2020, but I do believe we're going to be able to come through it.
It shows you what you really need, what the things that are important. One of the things we found, I mean, we've always eaten pretty well. We don't eat a bunch of crap and go to McDonald's all the time and Burger King and all the rest of it, but we've been buying our fresh fruits and vegetables from a wholesaler who only used to supply pubs and restaurants, and you know, he didn't sell to the public, but obviously now with the situation, those are all closed. Mm. So we got a tip on buying directly from this guy. So we've been buying boxes of fresh fruit and vegetables, and there's all these things that he's sending us home with that we normally wouldn't buy. And so we've had to get creative on how to cook all these fresh different types of vegetables. Mm-hmm. So that's been a really good thing. I like to cook anyway, so that's given me an excuse to try different recipes. And we've come up with some really amazing stuff, making soups and all sorts of things. So,
yeah, and
you know,
what I like
really
about
healthy.
That is, and you are taking some control. When we feel like we have no control, that is when we panic. That's a terrifying Absolutely. Feeling, which I know very well over the last few weeks, when you feel like your life is being changed and you have no control. But you're looking at this thing that you do have control over, and you're exploring creative ways to, you know, what can I do with these new foods that I've never cooked with and trying new recipes? That is a beautiful example. And it's the same when I talk about people who are thrust into homeschooling and they're unprepared and they didn't particularly want to do it. It's actually a fantastic opportunity. You must make the most of it. We all
embrace
must.
It. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, I know your landlord's going to be coming over at some point, not to evict you, but to do some renovation. So
yep.
We need to quit this thing before they start banging and making noise. So the last question, how can people get a hold of you if they want to chat with you, if they want to give some support or help you out in any way, if they can, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
On Twitter, I'm at wise_counselor, and counselor has two L's, the Canadian way, the British way.
The British way.
At wise counselor. And on Twitter, I'm also at divorce religion, all one word, at divorce religion. And then they can find me on Facebook at Janice Selby. It's just me.
That's the best way to get a hold of you. So
sure.
Thank you, Janice. I'm so sorry, though, just on the face of it, just to hear about all this stuff. I mean, going back to almost a year ago now, and here we are just literally days from when the conference was supposed to be starting. I'm so sorry that it fell through. And I mean, obviously on the virus thing, it needed to be canceled. But then to have all the other stuff, who would have thought, as we sat there in Vancouver last July, walking through the streets of Gastown and having a fantastic meal. So many things have changed for you, for me. I mean, like you say, situations can change and be completely out of our control, but all we can do is deal with them as they come in the healthiest way.
I'm still here. You're still standing. Yeah.
Still surviving. And that's huge. So thank you, Janice, so much for taking some time out of your busy schedule. I know you've got a lot going on, but we'll definitely keep in touch.
Oh, it's been so encouraging. I really appreciate your ongoing friendship. It's been so good to see you again.
Yeah. Thank you, Janice. See you soon.
Take care.